So I'll start off by chanting the four vowels. Anyone that knows it is welcome to join in. Shigu segan mo on shujo. Speak today about compassion in Zen, Zen view on compassion. It's a kind of rerun, though I will say something slightly different, but it's a rerun of what I gave at Adrian Sashin back in November, so I apologise to those of you who were there. So, one of the things, so compassion is a key aspect of Buddhism. It was a key part of the Buddha's teachings. And as a result, it is a very important part of Buddhist practice. Having said that, in Zen, we don't wear it on our sleeve in quite the same way as some other Buddhist schools, particularly the Tibetan schools, for example, do it, in that we tend, the image of Zen is less kind of obviously compassionate than some other Buddhist schools. But that doesn't mean it doesn't play a very important role in Zen, and it's something that sometimes gets forgotten. And its importance can be seen if we look at the way teachers have spoken about it. So one of our founders, Jean Babi, whose photo is just outside, he would often speak of it. He considered compassion a very important aspect of Zen. And also if we look back to Dogen, who was the founder of the Soto school in Japan, who went to China and brought it to Japan, he would speak of what he called grandmother mind, the kindly, kind of benevolent, but slightly not emotionally entangled mind of an elder woman in the community could have for what was going on around her. And so that was him, the grandmother mind, epitomised compassion. From a Zen point of view, compassion is intimately intertwined with wisdom. So Buddhism often speaks about how a bird needs two wings to fly, and in Buddhism the two wings are compassion and wisdom. And Zen is completely in agreement with that. And broadly, we can think of wisdom as being seeing things as they are clearly, without illusion, and compassion acting skillfully and appropriately in a situation to reduce suffering in that situation, and more broadly in the world at large. So wisdom is to see clearly, and compassion is to act in a way that reduces suffering for all. So how do we do that? How do we act in a way that reduces suffering? Well, our other founder, Nancy Amfu, whose photo is also up out there, when she was asked, what should you do to help someone? In fact, it was me that asked her when I was kind of 20 or so, what can you do to help people? She replied, leave them alone. That was and what she was getting at there is that often when we try to help, that help isn't necessarily helpful. It's not coming from a place of wisdom. It's it can be coming from a place of illusion. And in particular, so effectively it's coming from kind of our ego, our self. And there's different ways that can happen. The first is that we can feel a sense of pity rather than compassion, rather than seeing the situation clearly. We can feel a sense of pity for something. And we want to help out of this sense of pity. And really that is partly trying to make ourselves feel better. We want to help because we want to make ourselves feel better. And if we do that, because we're acting without clarity, then it can just make the situation worse. And another way in which the ego can get wrapped up with helping is egoic compassion, which is where we see the other person and we think we know what's best for them. You see what I mean? Again, it's not necessarily seeing things with clarity. We're putting our own frame of reference on the situation and we know what's best for them. And I know what's best for you, so it's very much coming from an I. I know what's best, and therefore you should do this, and then you'll be sorted out, sort of thing. So we have a strong idea of what we feel is right, and we kind of try to push it on the other person. And the thing is, we might be right. It might be true that we do know what's best, that you know our view is actually what would be very helpful for that person. But just because if they did what we think, it would be helpful for them, it doesn't mean saying it is the right thing. Because will they be able to hear it? Is now the right time for them to hear it? Are we the right person to express it? And in particular, a really good example of that is when a child grows up, then their parents might well see what's best for them, for an adult child. They might well see what's best for them. But it's very difficult for a child, an adult, to hear from their parents what advice, if you see what I mean. So even if a mother really does know what's best for her grown-up child, she might not be the person who can tell them. You see what I mean? And so it's not only... So just simply because we think we can see clearly, first of all, we might be mistaken, but even if we can see clearly, then we might not be able to... It might not be the right time, we might not be the right person. And so Nancy, when she said, leave them alone, was kind of encouraging this kind of stepping back, this not rushing in to help, to sort things out, the kind of rushing in to sort things out, which I think many of us, myself included, kind of can suffer from, the idea that we should rush in to sort things out whenever there's a problem. So true compassion is intimately entwined with wisdom. And in fact, whenever we practice together, we... revisit that idea through the chanting of the Hanyashingyo. The Hanyashingyo is a text which is exactly about the relationship between wisdom and compassion. Because it, even though it is the Sutra of Great Wisdom, so it's a sutra about clear seeing, clarity of mind, what one sees clearly, but it is taught not by the Bodhisattva of Wisdom, it's taught by Avalokiteshvara, who is the Bodhisattva of Compassion. So symbolically, it's saying that compassion comes from wisdom and wisdom comes from compassion. These two things are intimately related with each other and can't be separated. True compassion is compassion which is intertwined with wisdom. And what the Hanyashingyo says, Hanyashingyo speaks primarily about wisdom. What it says is that the wisdom is... to see that our self and its opinions, its desires, its anxieties, its thoughts, its attitudes, its emotions are a product of what it calls causes and conditions. There isn't some objective self which we are. It's something that arises out of the flow of events in the cosmos which come together and become me. And then fall apart and is no longer me. And so it's both in terms of one's whole lifetime, it comes together and it produces a me, and that me lives through a life, short or long, and then goes away again. But also in each moment, causes and conditions come together and result in the nature of our personality, the way our personality expresses itself in the world. So our personality isn't some rigid, objective, fixed self. Our personality is the product of a flow of causes and conditions. And this is the viewpoint of wisdom, is that our personality emerges from this flow of causes and conditions and expresses itself in the world. And the practice of Zazen is exactly sitting with this phenomenon. By sitting with this constant reconstruction of the self, the fact that in practice of Zen, we see how our mind flits from one thing to another. how one moment it's in one place, in another moment it's a very different place. In one moment it is a kind of happy and calm mind. Another moment it's anxious or angry with something that happened maybe 5 minutes ago, or sometimes 30 years ago. You know, it's the mind is very much far less stable than we like to present. Our self is far less solid and constructed than we like to present. It's something that comes together with flows. And Jean Babi used to use the image, it's almost like a out-of-tune radio that gets tuned round and round. And sometimes it gets tuned into one thing, and sometimes it gets tuned into another thing. And we have very little control. It's not that we have no control, but we have very little control of the way things come in and out of our mind. We can't control what comes in and out of our mind, but we have some extent of control over our response to them. That's the kind of Buddhist philosophy. We can't control what comes in, but we have a certain amount of control over how we respond to what comes in. So, through the practice of Zazen, we see the fact that the self that we like to present to the world is constructed. It's not something that has some objective reality. It's something that is constructed, partly by chance, by the flow of things, partly by what's gone in the past, by decisions we made in the past. So we see the patterns in our ego. We see how our constructed self has certain patterns in it, how in some situations we respond in one way, in other situations we respond in another way, and how some of these patterns cause suffering. These patterns cause suffering for ourselves, and they cause suffering for others. These patterns arise, manifest in the world, and then fade away again. And these patterns of arising can cause suffering. But these patterns aren't ultimately real. I am not objectively that kind of person. I'm not someone who always reacts to anger. You can see in Zazen, even if you do always react to anger, that is simply an arising pattern. And since it's an arising pattern, one can step past it, beyond it, somewhere else. So when we see these patterns in ourselves, we can see that effectively we are puppets to these patterns, and we can have compassion towards oneself. We can accept our faults and our mistakes. We can accept that we aren't perfect. We can accept that these faults and mistakes and patterns are results of causes and conditions in our past and the way they manifest. So these mistakes manifest through this me. They are kind of a knot of causes and conditions that is self-aware, and mistakes manifest through it, but also good things manifest through it. And that means we are neither as great as we think we are when we're feeling most arrogant, nor are we as bad as we think we are when we're feeling most ashamed. So the realities that we sometimes live, the kind of illusions we live, we're somewhere between that. So again, use the phrase, we're half a person. It's impossible for us to be a whole person. And so we shouldn't either believe that we are a whole person, or think that we should be a whole person. That's what Dogen says. We're always half a person, always an imperfect creature in this world that is a product of the causes and conditions. So, by seeing that in Zazen, by being compassionate towards our faults, then we can have what Dogen calls grandmother mind towards our quirks, our failures, our mistakes in the world. We can have a certain amount of compassion. And if we have compassion towards ourselves, towards this self, this knot of causes and conditions, which we call me, then naturally, without forcing ourselves, then these mistakes will have less power in our lives. That's the key thing. They'll have less power. They won't go away, but they'll have less power. They'll dominate us less. When they arise, we'll be able to deal with them more skillfully, and they'll cause less suffering for ourselves and for others. So having compassion for oneself, or compassion for oneself, which comes from seeing that oneself is in some way just a product of causes and conditions, not some rigid, perfect ego, or attempting to be perfect ego, then we can have grandmother mind towards ourselves. And we can see that in others. So to an extent, wisdom is seeing it in oneself, and compassion is seeing it in others, seeing that what arises in other people is a product of the causes and conditions rather than some rigid fixed that is what they are. And so when someone else, their actions cause suffering in the world, whether it's for us personally or wider, then we can step beyond the need to judge their ego individually. We can see that self, that suffering is arising through that self, but that self, again, is a knot of causes and conditions in the world. So that means compassion. For example, when we see something, if someone does something that we don't agree with, then you can have a kind of flame of self-righteous anger coming up inside you. Or, more mildly that, just the desire to prove oneself right. If someone says something which maybe is slightly critical of you, or even just expressing a fact about the world that you think that they've got wrong, there's this kind of, in more extreme versions, it's a self-righteous anger. Sometimes it's just a desire to show that you're right and they're wrong. And compassion allows you to go beyond that, because that reaction is simply a reaction of the ego, wanting to, being angry, self-righteous anger, because you know that they're in some way a bad person, or even just that they're wrong. Wanting to put that right is an act of ego. So effectively what happens is that you've got these kind of two knots of a rising self coming up, one self and the other person, and they collide, and there's some suffering that's going on. But we can step beyond it. The anger is less powerful if we feel it. We can have a more skillful response when this self-righteous anger tries to come up inside us. We can have a more skillful response. That doesn't necessarily mean we ignore bad things, but sometimes it means we do ignore something that's wrong. If someone does something that's wrong, there's no necessarily need for one to correct it. If that correction comes from a place of self-righteous anger, then it's likely just simply to make the other person defensive and unable to receive that. So in fact, I've got, this is a Welsh NHS story now I've got, because there's a friend of mine whose father-in-law just died in hospital in Wales. And it was because he got a hospital-borne disease. I'm not sure what the phrase is. One of these kind of antibiotic-resistant diseases while he was staying in hospital. So he died, and his daughter is actually, she's quite a senior epidemiologist. That's what she knows quite a lot about the health system, and she could see that there was a number of things that had gone wrong about and so she was quite angry, understandably, angry and deeply upset. Her father would have died in maybe 2 or 3 years' time anyway, so he was near the end of his life, but nonetheless he died sooner than he needed to. She was quite angry. But when she was with the people who in the hospital who were partly responsible, they completely... She didn't necessarily express her anger, you know, she kind of was relatively professional about it. And they were completely... completely accepted their faults and basically owned up to it and said, you know, clearly we made faults. Partly it's because of lack of resources and lack of funding. It's partly because we could have done things better. And she, as a result of that, she felt no need. She felt that what had been done, without expressing her anger in some big way, what needed to be done had been done. And so the situation could move forward and some small good could come out of her father's death. And so partly because she didn't kind of go in with this self-righteous anger, and partly because the other people responded skillfully, then something relatively positive emerged out of that. And if she'd gone in from a position of anger straight away, it wouldn't have given the others space to respond skillfully. And so that was something that kind of could emerge from that. So we don't necessarily ignore bad things. We respond to bad things. Sometimes we do ignore bad things. Sometimes a small slight, you know, if someone maybe kind of makes some comment about you that you think isn't really appropriate, it makes you feel a little bit hurt. Maybe it's best just to let it go. You know, it's not necessary to defend every single small slight on one's ego, but things which maybe cause suffering in the world more broadly is necessary to respond to, but not from a place of self-righteous anger, but from a place of quiet stillness, and then see what appropriate response emerges. And so the phrase in Buddhism is that the response should arise from the cool light of compassion. Rather than from anger, it arises from the cool light of compassion. So one lets go of the anger and allows the response to come for compassion, accepting that I am imperfect, other people are imperfect, and we must just make do with how we are in that situation. So what about actually helping others who are suffering? So the first thing to say, what I've already spoken about, making peace with one's own demons and not reacting to the demons of others, mind demons I'm talking about, of course, is already a big help in the world. Simply being at peace with one's own mind demons and not reacting to them, and when the mind demons of others arise, not responding to them, and so something more skillful can happen. Already, that already helps a lot in the world. But having said that, many of us, myself included, want to do more. We might want to, you know, there's situate things in the world which make us feel sad, which we believe should be different, where we see suffering around the place, and we want to do something about that. So compassion can only manifest through our personality. So I've already spoken about the quirks and the flaws that we each have. And compassion will necessarily manifest itself through this, the quirks and the flaws that we have. And so I would say we allow it to manifest. It maybe sometimes it will be egoic, maybe sometimes it will be grounded in pity slightly. But nonetheless, we allow it to manifest and watch it. And we notice the ways in which it manifests as actions in the world and see what the outcomes of those actions are. Observe the feelings that arise in us. So do we see feelings of pity? If so, just watch them. Doesn't mean you need to deny them. Just watch them. And or are we being kind of forcing our views on others? And notice the effect in the world. Does it reduce suffering, or does it result in us actually making mistakes which cause more suffering? So what was intended as a compassion action actually cause more suffering? And so by watching our own actions, then over time, we can reduce the kind of certainty that we might force on others, and allowing a certain openness to take its place, an openness to allow people to be what they are, but with still nonetheless a certain sense of confidence. And so compassion in the end, we should allow just simply help to emerge through our own lives, that's fine, but watch it. Watch the mistakes that we make through that. And over time, then there'll be a certain openness that emerges, which is open to things as they are, but nonetheless has a certain confidence. And that's something that, again, going back to Jean Babi, one of our founders, he used to say that caring is about giving people space and time to discover things by themselves. So for him, very much, he was a teacher who didn't intervene a lot. He would create a space. It was really his presence. He would be present, and he'd create space, but he didn't intervene a lot. He would just allow things to move forward. Every now and then, he would intervene when he felt it was necessary, but he didn't intervene a lot in how things were. So the idea was he was encouraging us to discover things by ourselves. And that discovery can be asking someone advice, asking him advice, asking other advice. And in fact, it was very much what he said was very close to what Suzuki Roshi also said, in that in America, Suzuki Roshi said that caring for people is like he said that it's kind of creating a nice field, but then just watching what they do in the field rather than telling them what to do in the field. You create a nice space and then you allow them to be as they are. Maybe you'll intervene every now and then, but basically it's relatively letting them find their own way. And so to an extent, the creating a sangha is creating Bristol Dojo, Sesshins, etc., trying to create a space where we come together, we have certain way things that we do, but we don't, unlike some other Buddhist groups or other religious groups, we don't have strong ideas about how you should be or how you shouldn't be in your life, if you see what I mean. There's certain things that we do say, like step beyond your ego, observe. But we don't say, okay, you know, do drink, don't drink. We don't have strong kind of views about how individuals should live their lives. But rather, by creating a space where we share, then we each learn and we can move forward in our lives, to be more skillful in our lives, living, expressing our personality as appropriate, letting go of the ego, but expressing our personality as appropriate without forcing it on others. So that's what compassion's about. So, thanks for listening. So we'll finish again, we'll chant the four vows for anyone that knows it.
Shi gu se gan mo on shu